I think you just became my personal hero.
Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. At Burn on the Board, Greg Pappas in studio. SB futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 68. We have the big Fed meeting this week as they are pouring more money into the system, and they're going to let us know. Probably they're going to cut rates by 0.25%, which they, in fact, have already done. So what do you think about that, Greg? They've already done it. Now they're going to tell us about it.
I think the event on Tuesday is the Bears-Vikings. I think that's going to be more interesting than anything the Fed does.
You mean tonight?
Oh, yeah, tonight. I don't know what day it is.
You know how they define mercy in today's world? There's another game on, so this whole country doesn't have to watch the Bears.
Ouch. Yeah, I mean, Vikings are favored by a touchdown. That's probably a pretty safe bet.
I think the sneak team might be the Packers.
No. Lions played really well.
They got clobbered by Buffalo.
They didn't get clobbered. It was only 7 points at the end. But well, I think it was a...
Buffalo's got a better team, I think.
Unbelievable display of offense that whole night.
Detroit's got a good D, although they do have a bunch of people hurt.
Yeah, Detroit's... they couldn't get it done. I mean, from the first quarter, they were behind, so... Oh, well.
Well, they can say what they want about... what's their guy? Jason, who's their quarterback, Detroit? Golf?
Jared Goff.
Yeah, he's no Allen. That kid's really good.
Yeah, well, he had way better stat line.
Well?
Almost 500 yards, 5 TDs. That still couldn't get him over the hump.
No. Well,
so I mean, sorry.
I don't think Mahomes is hurt too bad.
Nah.
But
and plus, the refs are on their side.
Oh, God.
They're not going anywhere.
And then we got the college games. We were gonna Kevin might call in a little bit later. I was just unlike the rest of you guys. You know, you've got the blinders on a little bit. Once I have the I'm just kidding. Whenever stuff like this happens, and you find yourself doing it in your own feeble brain. I mean, I know I do. Whenever something like this happens, which is rare. Something totally goes on—I won't say unlawful, but off the rails. You know, it's like what's happening to college football and maybe basketball, but football for sure. I remind you, did you ever read *The Dogs of War*?
No.
It's a great book. But anyway, the line from Shakespeare, and I think it might have been—I don't know—one of the original Greek writers was
cry havoc.
Yeah, cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war. We've let loose the dogs of something here.
You know who else let loose the ball out of the end zone?
We have Kevin.
We
might as well bring his behind in here and the rest of them. We're talking about once you do something like this, Kevin, you never really know. It's like starting a war. You never really know where it's going to end, right? And I was
You hearing me? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And actually, I was talking to Kevin a little bit. I was bothering him on my way home from the South Side. When you sit there and go, okay, well, there's certain rules here that are going to stay all the time. And then you go, wait a minute. What makes you think that the rule I think is going to stay is going to stay? And Kevin brought up something last night. I'll let you say it, Kevin. What is unique about this Saturday?
What is unique about this Saturday is that as Russell... pointed out last week, the NFL always starts Saturday games the week after the Army-Navy game. And so this is the week where the NFL is starting Saturday games to fill in the void of the lack of football. as they do every single year, except this is the year that there's a triple header of college football playoffs on. So the only people who will be interested in NFL games are going to be the fans of the specific teams involved, and nobody, and you're probably not going to get much audience. Now, I'll have to see, you know, how they line up, if there's ever, if there's a time slot anywhere in there that the NFL is going to get exclusive. But man, they picked a bad week to start populating their Saturday time slots.
They picked a bad day to get off amphetamines.
Bad day to stop sniffing glue.
Yep. Well, so, the colleges, colleges 1, 3, 30, and 7. How the hell, where's a slot?
I would say there isn't one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, unless they want to do like a morning game for the NFL. But yeah, it's like the NFL just kind of went along doing what they always do, and it didn't occur to them that they might want to take a look at what's going on outside of their bubble. So they have that. Now, you also mentioned that we get a reprieve. You know, half of the, anybody who doesn't want to watch the Bears tonight can't. But I'm telling you, I'm not telling you that that's much of a reprieve when they have Las Vegas against Atlanta. It's just a bad football night.
Well, Atlanta's actually in the hunt.
I think they didn't they fall out of it last week.
I think their whole. I'm gonna look, but I think
I think they're a real long shot now.
I think they got zero chance. Let me look, because there's only like two divisions that have anybody winning. The rest of them, everybody's like 500. It's gonna win the division. The Rams and San Francisco are that way. That division. Let me look before I shoot off my.
Speaking of Army Navy, did you guys watch that game? That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was a good game, boy. Navy kicked some ass.
They weren't ready for that. And Army's going to a bowl game.
Well, they got how many wins? They only lost one game, right, or two?
The Army, I think they were set to go against Marshall, and then Marshall had their coach drop out, and then a whole bunch of players hit the portal. So they had to, the NCAA had to fill in. So I think
Louisiana
Army's
Tech or something.
Yeah, they picked Louisiana Tech, but that was after Marshall couldn't field a team.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to be
disappointed. Well, and with that, you know, I have thought that the lesser bowl games were in their decline stage anyway, and now with the playoffs, they totally are. So I would go with that, but I just can't see most of them lasting any longer. Even though the only reason that they exist is to fill TV time, not to fill the stands. It doesn't really matter. The only value for the programs themselves is extra practice time, and I think that's probably overrated too.
I'm going to be real cynical here, Kevin. You can tell me I'm real cynical. The only time they're going to stop doing those games is if so many people leave that you can't get a betting line on them. They become such a travesty.
You could say that. I mean, the only other value too is that your freshmen who didn't play all year, they can play. And because they won't exceed their four-game limit, you get effectively a new spring schedule, a new spring game.
Well, I was just going to say that the coaches look at it as the first game of next year, and 2 weeks of practice you wouldn't have had. Anyway, the Falcons, Greg's utterance, who's our master at the fake football, whatever you guys do. They are only a game behind. If they win tonight, they're 7-7. The Buccaneers are leading the division at 8-6. So
yeah, so they are still in it. Yep, yeah, I'm looking at that too.
The division where everybody's gone. I mean, is the North, where the Lions, the Vikings, the Packers. You're gonna have two wildcard teams out of that division, which is kind of rare. The Rams and the Seahawks, the Cardinals, the 49ers. The 49ers are the part that was over the fence last, and they're only one game out, or two games out. From the Rams and the Seahawks, so they could conceivably get in. Cardinals are one game behind, so a lot of these divisions are real close, even though the teams aren't that great. Or I'll say the teams are even. How's that? Right now, it looks like the Commanders.
We'll also say they're opposite the Raiders tonight, and the Raiders are terrible. The Raiders, they've only won two games. They hired Luke Getsy, who's the guy the Bears fired from as offensive coordinator last year. And he didn't make it halfway through the season with them before they cut him loose. and they're just a complete mess.
It's after all the money they got from going to Vegas, right?
I'm sure they enjoy banking it.
Yeah. Well, so that right in the AFC, it looks like the wild card are going to be the Broncos, the Ravens, and then either the Chargers. I can't believe they got clobbered. Chargers, or maybe even got to be the Chargers, I guess. Broncos, Chargers, and Ravens.
Wait a second. The Raiders, or no, Atlanta has, they're playing the Raiders, they're playing the Giants, they're playing the Commanders and Panthers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They got an easy way in.
Yeah, I take back what I said earlier. They are definitely playoff bound. They don't have, they just have to not suck.
Yeah. Well, anyway, just let's sneak back to the college a little bit. Kevin, if I'm a, why doesn't somebody who goes to Northwestern and the or someplace, they know they have a deal like this, or if Notre Dame, I'll use Notre Dame. If somebody goes to Notre Dame and he's an architecture student, which by the way, I think there's ever been a football player architecture student, because the architecture is probably one of the, you wouldn't think about it, but that's like the hardest major there. It's a 5-year major, and they kick those guys' ass for 5 years, and ladies too. I mean, it's, you never, Greg, saw an architecture major at a bar. All he did was study
architecture, pre-med. Yeah, there's a few of them that are just incredibly challenging.
And my cousin went to Ohio State in aerospace engineering, and he was the same way. 5 years of just in the class. But anyway, but why somebody's going to file a suit and say, "Hey, I'm here for 5 years. Why can't I play ball for 5 years?" Or if you go to Northwestern, has a med school is 3 years after undergrad. If you tell them that you want to do pre-med and med at med school, I believe there's a 6-year combined program. And if you're a doctor who likes to play quarterback or whatever health position you like to play, why can't you play 6 years? I mean, the history of football was a lot different. Jan Flanagan was going to look some of this up, but I think that when Newt Rockne played, didn't he get out of high school and he worked the post office for how many years, Kevin, and then decided, "I'm going to college," and played? George Gipp was, what, 25, 24?
Yeah, that was more typical once upon a time. And, you know, now, and that's still pretty typical. A lot of students go to work after high school and then find their way back to college at some point later on. I certainly get a lot of them. But that's not the typical model for high school students. There are some exceptions out there. So, for instance, if you go on a 2-year Mormon mission, that doesn't count. Your clock stops kicking then, or stops kicking, but it definitely does stop ticking too.
Yes. But when you start talking about these rules, I mean, because we talked about it last week, Kevin, and my, my thrust on all this has been, when you do, because this is what I used to, on the easy end, this is what I used to do for Pullman. You know, should we buy this machine? What cost $300,000? By the way, it lasts 50 years. What's our horizon? We're closing next year. Maybe we should buy the parts if somebody else has already got the machine. I mean, duh, right? So when you start talking about the NFL, I think there's a real chance that this college game, like you came up with this weekend articulately, they're going to be a serious competitor to the senior team here pretty quickly. And who's to say that with the portal, UI Chicago doesn't say, "Hey, we could have a football team." All of a sudden, you get a few sponsors, you get Saturday games at Soldier Field, and you go into the portal, and you got a team next year. Who's to say you're not a competitor? It's like the minor league system in baseball, but you could be right next to the pros, or at least the...
Props to DePaul for actually putting together a team and being good this year.
Yeah.
And that took 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you look at... first of all, when you look at the model, who used to go to the pros before eligibility was expired, and a certain number of them are going to continue to do so. So if you complete 3 years and you're going to be a very high round draft pick, it probably makes sense for you. But there were always a lot of guys who they knew they were going to be taken down the draft. They were going to be, round 5, round 6, maybe round 7. And they just wanted to get on with their pro careers. Maybe they didn't like college very much, or that they weren't adapting well to the academic side of it. You know, there'd be a lot of reasons for that, but there were always guys who said, you know, let's go ahead and get started on the next phase of my life. And those guys, you know, they could be making more money than they make in the pros. It's gonna vary from one to the next, in terms of what, you know, what's available to them. I remember a lot of people kept saying, well, Caitlin Clark's going to take a pay cut now that she's going to the WNBA. I'm sitting here going, wait a minute, what makes you think that all of her endorsement money isn't going to follow her, that maybe the WNBA itself doesn't pay that much, but what makes anyone think that for a popular player, the endorsement money doesn't follow? And I think in some cases, when it comes to college football, the endorsement money will actually be greater because, you know, there just aren't that many. There are some college players that make a fortune on their own. Caleb Williams was an example of that, and there's always been a few, you know, some of those that have kind of that national brand.
Mostly women.
I'd like to talk about. Pardon?
Kind of mostly women.
Well, I think it is mostly women for a couple of reasons. Women's basketball players generally stay all 4 years. There's, you know, if you're a little older, you may qualify for the WNBA draft after three, but you have to, I think you have to turn 22 in the draft year, and a lot of them don't turn 22 until they're seniors. So they're around, and you know, there's still a lot of transferring around, but you get stars who identify with a school, with a program, and they, you know, they get to develop a whole public persona, and they are generally appealing. In men's basketball, you got the best players are all one and done because they can go to the NBA that much earlier, so they don't stick around and develop that loyal college following. And then you go into the NBA, and very few take the, especially when they're 19 years old, very few are going to take the league by storm and become their own, you know, advertising phenomenon. So, you know, I think that is a little bit different. And so, circling back to what we discussed earlier, when it comes to basketball, there is some advantage to a lot of players sticking around for, you know, a third year, 2 years, 3 years, and so on, because I think they really can do very well while they're in college.
These are jobs now.
The NBA does pay a hell of a lot of money, even at the rookie minimum.
These are jobs that are going to be even more in demand now. That if you could get $50,000 or $60,000 paying, or for being a bench player or whatever, you know, these are going to be much more competitive now, and sticking around is going to be something. Not only the
well, that's my question, Greg. Where is it written that? I mean, the deal they had was college was the minor the. Unpaid, unofficial minor league for pros. And now, you know, I don't want to give free advice here.
It's the better paid minor league for pros. Yeah.
Well, but I'm going to give free advice here, which I shouldn't do because these guys can afford to pay me $1,000 an hour. If you're a private equity firm buying into the NFL at ridiculous numbers, what seem to be ridiculous numbers, you better keep an eye on this. Because I'm not so sure the NFL is not going to be cut in half here in 5 years. Or, I mean, not in half, but by 25%. Because, I'll tell you what, Kevin, boy, this is going to sound totally sexist. The reason why the girls are making more money is they have more personality than some of these guys. I mean, Caitlin Clark did a great job on Saturday Night Live. I don't know how many guys you want to put on there. They're not anxious to get the guys on there, are they?
Well, yeah, and from, you know, when as I go back and think through all the time that I was covering Notre Dame basketball, there were a lot of good players, a lot of really good players, but I can probably count on one hand the ones that I thought had exceptional personalities. You know, that sort of goes back to, and some of them weren't really big-time pro prospects. So it didn't matter. But like most people, and I think that's probably true of the women athletes as well, like most people, they're kind of boring at, you know, 19 years old, 20 years old.
So were we. so were we.
Yeah, so were we. So, you know, I think that's it. But every once in a while, somebody stands out. And as I look back over the years, you know, Tori Jackson was one who stood out. tough little point guard, and he was great, you know, like the youngest of 14 kids, who just was funny as hell and smart as hell and was a great interview. You know, leading up to Pat Connaughton, who was also, you know, the same thing, only just, you know, he's still playing for the Bucks. He's, you know, he was a real prospect. And you know, there were a few others along the way. You know, I don't know if you remember a guy named V.J. Beachum. I just thought guy was an incredibly, you know, smart young man who had a lot of interesting insights. Demetrius Jackson was the same way. But that's, you know, we're getting to the end of the list here. I might be able to think back and come up with a couple more.
Plus, they don't look as good on a runway model thing as the girls.
Well, that's true. I mean, there certainly is a certain amount of, you know, appeal based on physical appearance. And, you know, that's where, you know, I just told you over the weekend, what's her name? Hannah Hidalgo signed a big deal with, what's the energy drink that everybody...
Red Bull.
Red Bull, yeah. She signed, you know, Energizer player signs on with Red Bull. Yep. But Red Bull does have a whole series of women athletes, among them Dallas Stars and WNBA All-Star former Notre Dame player Arike Ogunbowale, who crashed Hannah's announcement because she was on campus for the UConn game. She crashed Hidalgo's announcement ceremony, and they got to talking about, you know, whose team was better, this year's or Ogunbowale's team, so it was kind of a funny exchange.
I'll tell you what, Hidalgo starts on any team they've ever had.
I would say so.
I don't think I've ever seen a bundle of energy like that. My God, I can't imagine.
Well, and then we'll say, you know, when Hidalgo came in, everybody wondered why she chose Notre Dame, because Olivia Miles was already there, who was a really outstanding point guard. And then Miles missed last season when Hidalgo was a freshman recovering from ACL. And so they're back, and so the big question this year was, can those two coexist together? Because there's only one ball, and they've been great together. And the other criticism of, you know, the critique of Miles was always, well, she's really got to get her outside shot going. She's making 48% of her three-pointers this year so far.
She's going to get the ball right where she wants it, because that's what Hidalgo is going to do for her.
Well, it's really more the other way around. Hidalgo is a good passer. Miles is an uncanny passer, so she gets a lot of people, including Hidalgo, the ball, and when you get somebody open in the corner for a three-pointer, if you give them the ball chest high, right in the middle, then that shot's going up quicker than anybody can close out to contest it.
I remember when we were in college, didn't the Knicks, who had Walt Frazier, correct? They traded for I won't say late in his career, but somewhat later in his career, Earl of Pearl Monroe, right?
Black Jesus.
Yeah, and one of our guys said, we were sitting around, we never had a beer, Kevin. Somebody said, what are you going to do with those two guys? I go, you're going to play them. They're the other team's problem. They're not yours. The other team's got to figure out how to guard both of them. It's not your problem. It's like, what are you going to do if you have Ralph Sampson and who was the other guy at the same time? It came to dream, right?
Yeah.
What do you do with them? You play them. Let the other two idiots try to figure out how to deal with 2 7-footers that are both good. It's not your problem. It's theirs. Am I right?
Well, it is. Yeah, they just have to adapt to play together.
Yeah, as long as they learn to play. But there's plenty of room for everybody out there.
In the case of the two ND women guards, they're both have putting up the highest numbers of their career. Both of them are, because they figured out how to play together.
You know, the one girl on that team that I think is, she's, well, people think she's good, but whatever you need her to do, whenever they get in some kind of a stall of some kind, when you run into these, you know, these walls all the time in basketball, that's other lady, Citron, if she needs she's the one person, you know, I've seen, she reminds me a lot of Havlicek. If you need her to rebound a game, she rebounds. If you need her to play defense, she plays defense. If you need her to score, she scores. Whatever she senses the team needs, she does.
She always gets the other team's best player. And when they played Connecticut the other night, she had to chase Paige Beckers all night, scored only 7 points, although she did hit a really clutch three when they needed it.
That's what I mean.
But she chased Beckers all around the court. Beckers got 25 points, and I thought that her defense was spectacular. Because if you would have seen, you know, I was there in person, and if you see the number of screens that they ran Beckers through on every time they got in half-court offense, you would figure that poor Citron is going to be so bruised because she'd get through the first three, and it was really the fourth screen that might get Beckers a shot. It was just something to watch. The battle was really cool to watch. But it was all a matter of making her work for every last thing she got. And Paige Beckers is a terrific player. And make her work for everything she gets, and also make them run a lot of clock to get them.
If you watch the current male pro game, it's not even, in one man's opinion, it's totally different basketball. It's one guy in the middle throwing out to somebody at the three, and you try and whether if you're hot that night, you win. Basketball didn't used to be like that. The amount of, I remember going to a practice one night. You could go to, when Digger Phelps was there, I don't know what the hell it is now, you could just walk into practice every night and sit there. I mean, there was no issue with you being over at the convoy. You go to the convoy, maybe have a handball game or something, and I go over and I just sit and watch practice for an hour. And it was so educational, because I love to play basketball too, but I'd never played on a high school team or anything. But they had a guy, they were playing Ohio State. Ohio State had this this white guy that was a shooter, right? And I don't know what he's good at anything else, but he was a real good shooter, and there were spots where the guy basically didn't miss. It's before the three-point line. So Digger was walking the team through the set of screens that Ohio State used to get this guy open. Sometime it was two or three in a row. There'd be somebody who would screen the dribbler so he could get by somebody, so somebody would have to switch to him. Meanwhile, somebody else would go screen that guy off, so the guy that they wanted to shoot would move to another spot, and then he would be open, and you'd get him the ball. I'm sitting there going, that's pretty complicated. But that's what if you watch the you can get this on YouTube. I don't know if the whole game is there, but if you watch Michael Jordan's 63-point game against, was it Boston, the playoffs, was he was a rookie or something, or whatever one it was, Kevin.
Yeah, it was early in his career.
Out of the 63 points, I'm going to say 20 to 25 of them were Jordan-esque. You know, or he was doing stuff that nobody else could do when he was younger. Now, the other were people screening somebody, getting him the ball just as he flashed open, and he had an amazingly quick release. The team worked him the other 40. Now, of course, he had a quick release, and he got, you know, he was quick enough to get through the screen. He still was Michael Jordan. But, I mean, 40 of those points, I won't say they gave him, but they got him. And the other 20 were his. You don't see that in basketball anymore. I mean, you do in college. You don't pro at all. Well, some of the good teams still do some of it. But it's pretty complicated. I mean, sometimes there's two and three screens leading to somebody being open. Not just the one you're looking at when you're following the ball, right, Kevin?
Yeah, not just the last one that got on the shot.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of Citron, I had a YouTube interviewer with her. I'll see if I can find it. But it was a long interview, probably about 20 minutes, and I'm guessing a good 7 to 8 minutes was dedicated to just different clips and her talking about defending screens. It was really a masterclass in what it means to play defense against a team that screens a lot, and how challenging it is. If you want to learn something about basketball, that's a good way to do it.
And if your teammates don't tell you there's a screen there, by the end of the night, you're pretty bruised.
You are, and then I'll go back to, you know, the Connecticut game last week. I had to believe she was pretty bruised anyway, because they are a good screening team.
Well, so what is your next iteration of the football? I mean, I think teams are going to bail out the college. They just don't want to be a pro team. Other teams might just bail in for the money. I mean, why wouldn't we, if we were really into this and had a bunch of spare shekels? Why wouldn't we go to UIC and say, you guys want a team? Chicago's a big market. You know, it's not just the Bears. They suck anyway. Why can't we play in Soldier Field on Saturday afternoon that we can have a team through the portal next year? We can be just like Colorado, for God's sake. I mean, if there's money, I'm not sure, Kevin, once you unleash the dogs of war here, I don't know where this is going to go.
I would say pro markets have always been tough for college teams. Even USC, as good as they've been at many times over the years, has always had a hard time filling up. I mean, granted, they play in a very large stadium, so it is hard to fill anyway. But you know, they when the Rams have been there, when they've had pro teams, the USC and UCLA options have not fared as well. They might have a couple of games that they sell out, but they don't have the popularity of a pro team.
Cracking
a pro market's difficult. Where you want to be is you want to be where you own the market, and owning the market can mean Tuscaloosa, Alabama, as an example. Well, and because every city in that state is yours.
Well, I mean, you have the Cubs and the Sox here, and still you have four other of the pickup teams, whatever you want to call them, the teams that aren't affiliated. They're okay. They're doing all right. They're not doing great.
And they have some minor league team. You know, they got the team that's out in St. Charles.
That's the closest one that's affiliated. They used to have the one up in Kenosha. They're not
getting. You know, how many are they really getting per game? Are they getting 2,500 a game?
I doubt it.
Are the unaffiliated leagues? You know, the Northern League teams. Are they getting more than 1,000 a game?
They do, but they really have to push for it. I was in Crestwood a couple times. The only times I've been there, I'll be honest, a couple times I've been there are one of my buddies' son is on the Blue Island Fire Department. So I would always go for the Blue Island Fire Department league, would have a huge cookout, and you donate some money, and it's crowded that night. Now, I bet they have to do something like that every night to get people there, would be my guess. I don't know, as to what their walk-up crowd would be, you know, I have no idea. I think Schaumburg does all right. What are those guys' names, Greg? It's the hell's their name?
Flyers?
The Flyers, yeah. The Flyers.
Bloomers?
There's somebody. There's two teams out there, aren't there?
The Dogs?
Yeah, the Dogs. But what do they get? 1,000, 1,500 a night, maybe? You know, I don't know how long their season is. But you wonder. I guess what I start out by saying, Kevin, if I was investing in a pro team now, am I buying the top here? I mean, what if college goes to 5 years for people, and six? I mean, the guys are going to be there getting made a lot of money. I mean, question is
I mean, what we're really saying is, as we go through here, is, you know, what are we trying to do? How's it going to shake out? And I think there's a fair amount of uncertainty to that, because you start pushing things back and forth. When we talked about, you know, a men's basketball player a little while ago, maybe you want to stick around. You know, certainly you might want to stick around before you, if you're going to be playing professionally in Europe. How does that stack up? You know, being the seventh man on your team and maybe making $50,000, or maybe going to, you know, downshifting from a Big Ten to maybe a Mid-America Conference or something like that, and being a full-time starter on a team, you still might not make the $50,000, depending on what their financial arrangements are, but you may very well get to be a player and get to showcase yourself. And as an athlete at that age, I want to play. I want to play as much as I can. I want to play at the best level I can for as long as I can.
Well, it looks like it's the Schaumburg Boomers.
Okay.
The Flyers got kicked out for not paying rent.
Okay. All right. There you go.
An average attendance thing, 49-15 in 2023, I found real quickly for the South Bend Cubs, and they're very popular here. So, you know, there's great attendance right there, is getting 5,000 for a game, almost 5,000 for a game.
Well, that is a lot.
It is a lot, yeah.
Is it
a big financial model, or is it, it certainly might be self-sustaining. And they're really good. They're really good at what they do. They promote the team very well. They make the game experience pretty good. And it's really good for families. So, I think they probably are better at it than most. What I'm saying is this is an uncertain business model, both college and pro, from the highest levels to the lowest levels. I'm not sure how it's going to shake out anymore. I always thought I had a vision of what this was going to be, and I'm not there right now. I just don't know.
Well, you have to be careful whenever you do these kinds of analysis, which is what I try and bring to the table, because I used to do this. When you look at, let's say, for instance, I'll switch games over to the casinos. There was a, there were ten casino licenses, right? I don't know if you guys remember that. And that was all we were going to have. So all of a sudden, one of them was in East Dubuque. If you guys remember this, I actually went to that casino. And it was kind of bizarre. But I used to go to Vegas 3-4 times a year before I traded. And I loved it. I used to, you know, I was a half-ass counter in blackjack, not enough to really be a winner, but enough to defend myself so I could be there 3-4 days. And I loved playing it. I played like a long period of time, and I'd sit there, and the people show was great. And I figured out why don't this thing with these casinos is a really bad idea. And the boats, you get on, by the time they tell you where the life preservers are, you're only on there for 2 hours, and God, that's no fun. Why would I want to go do that? All of a sudden, I went to one of these things, East Dubuque, and I got this beautiful boat. Everybody was out of money in like 45 minutes because there was a time limit to how long you could stay. So people essentially blew their wad. Then they're all sitting at the bar broke. And I sit there and go, this is the greatest model on earth. 2 hours later, another bunch of stiffs comes on and gives you all their dough. Anyway. But anyway, my point here, you know, going at it too slow, is that thing closed up, the East Dubuque thing, and they sailed it down the river, and I don't know where the hell they went with the boat to New Orleans or someplace. So this license is dancing around the state for, what was it, Kevin, 10 years? And every time they went to find a spot, they said somebody was bad. And the interesting part is I knew a bunch of the people who owned that license. They're all from the Board of Trade. And they, I don't know, most of them got bought out, you know, before they were still. Anyway, the thing ends up landing at the Rivers Casino in Des Plaines or Palatine or somewhere, whatever it is. The Rivers Casino lands there. And they finally open. This is after a decade. I guess it's a nice place. I've never been there. Well, they opened this massive amount of business, right, for the first 2-3 months. But then I saw this analysis that the amount of money they picked up in those 3 months was almost exactly equal to the money that the other 9 lost during the same 3 months. So totally, you didn't gain anything. Obviously, they did. And I just wonder, the more you push towards the college here, if all of a sudden the guys play a little longer and it becomes a bigger deal, and I wonder if is the sports money, can it double, or whatever the colleges win, the pros are going to lose. I mean, you wonder where is all the dough coming from?
Right.
I guess.
Is the demand capped? Is the demand right where it is now? And so now they're just playing to say who can cannibalize who. And I think the expert answer on that should come from John Flanagan, because we've only cut into his time by about 15 minutes.
So. Yeah, well, John is all.
Probably bring John in and get me out of here.
Yeah, well, John.
Well, spent for me, Kevin.
Well, John has all this boring ass stuff to talk about, like the study about the Havana thing that came out, and a whole bunch of other stuff we're talking about, like the real world. So much more fun to talk about sports, isn't it?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. All right, Kevin, thank you very much.
Chicago sports, and in that case, it sucks.
Well, we got to get you some time this week because you're losing 2 Wednesdays in a row, Christmas and New Year's.
Oh, okay. We'll figure it out.
John, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How about you, Ted?
I'm all right. I just kind of gloomy out and kind of rainy, but all I keep saying is I'm not slipping and sliding on it, and I'm not shoveling it, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I landed a snow removal guy again. I was getting kind of worried I hadn't heard from him because he had no business last year, so maybe he'll have some business this year, but better he try to do this than I do.
Well, my man Nate, he and his buddy Jerry have been doing my stuff forever. A few years ago, somehow or another, they landed a snowblower. So they're doing a bunch of places now, but anyway, I don't have to worry too much about that. All you do is keep them in salt and shovels, and I'm good.
Yeah.
But still, I'd rather not. When Scruff was alive, the only thing I'd have to do is we'd make it down the front steps at 3:30 in the morning when John and I were on the score at 5. You know, Scruff was first tracks in the snow. And the weird part with John is when Scruff got old and finally we had to put him down, which was a scary day. God, the next month, every time I'd go into one of the local establishments, one of the ladies would come by in tears. We know Scruffy's gone. We didn't see his tracks in the snow. I'm going, oh God, almost put you in tears right with him.
Yeah,
he was the dumbest little terrier dog that ever walked. Everybody loved him. Everybody absolutely loved him. Well, he was smart in his own way, I guess you could put it that way. But he was little character, but he loved everybody, and he liked all the other dogs, and all the little girls in the park would run out and push him around, and he didn't care if they did. See, he loved it. The more he got pushed, the happier he was. So, you know, he was just one of those guys that had some personality, even though he wasn't, they said he wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, but
Okay.
So now they're saying, the FBI's saying, you idiots are looking at manned spacecraft and calling them drones. What's going on out there?
Yeah, this is, you know, a pure prime example of not getting the story straight before you start answering questions. You can't keep up with all of the, you know, versions of this, whether it was John Kirby or Mayorkas or all these other people weighing in on it, which is just what people don't want to see or hear, Tom. You know, I mean,
yeah.
The thing that bugs me about it is, at first it sounded like they were calling anybody who, you know, witnessed these things, you know, fantasists or liars or you name it, which is not the way to go. And then they denied ever thinking or saying that. And now they're saying it's perfectly normal and, you know, nothing to be worried about. But they're still not giving, you know, anybody any confidence about that. And now you got people saying, well, it's clearly not Pentagon equipment. It's not human, so it's got to be alien. Well, I guess this was a long, circuitous route to really scare the blankety blank out of everybody.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, we're going to ask Matt Berner because he's so good at this. Maybe you could tweet this out, Matt. If you Google, I think it's still on there, Google Notre Dame Lightning UFO game.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that.
And, We had real flying saucers in that Lightning in those games. Those are real aliens, John. Just saying.
Well, do you remember, Tom? I think it was 1974, maybe February of 74. There was a UFO alien capture story about, you know, an event at the Notre Dame campus, where two students, I believe, claimed to have been, you know, kidnapped and taken in. And by aliens.
Sure, they weren't taking one of the bars?
Well, you know, this is the story lasted about a day or two, and it was covered in the Observer. I remember that when I was, you know, working there as a setup or the night controller or typist or what kind of jack of all trades in the wee hours when the story was being put together, there was, you know, debate among the editors, do we run this or not? And they ran it. And it was, you know, not a huge, you know, amount of blowback that I recall from it, but it shook me pretty bad because, I mean, it seemed fairly credible.
Were you jealous? Were you jealous they picked them and not you?
Oh, no, no, please. But, you know, never, you know, anything else about it in the South Bend papers that I recall with the national news or anything like that. It just sort of died, and I always kind of wondered, well, you know, this is an example of you know, a story that, you know, as many iterations of this you can find, and some of them more credible or scarier than others, but this didn't, you know, come back or, you know, have any kind of long-range effect from it, but it always stuck with me, and I, you know, I discount a lot of stories like that, but you see something like this drone invasion, and it's been going on practically every night, I think, since November 18th. So it's now a news item.
Well, the thing is, they always weirded me out. Well, quick story about the Notre Dame thing. The game was halted by lightning for like an hour. And it was a real serious lightning storm. And it was bad. And the NBC cameras kept looking at the sky, showing the lightning. Sure enough, in their camera shoot, not some, you know, some idiot holding a handheld camera, there's these things that look like little saucers flying in and out of the lightning strikes. I mean, they're there. Something's there. Some kind of an optical illusion. It's not like a bad camera or anything. So I say to my buddy Beldo, who's like Mike Royko's Slats Grobnik, right? I said, Beldo, what do you think about the flying saucers in the thing? What do you think of that? He goes, Tommy, everybody knows that when they come down here, the only way they can recharge to go home is to find some lightning and run through it. There's so much energy in lightning, it recharges all their batteries, and then off they go home again. I go, what do you mean everybody knows? Tommy, everybody knows that. Okay, then. Now, on the other hand, I would say that if I was a drone manufacturer and started testing this stuff, you know, I've flown a couple times with people in their little Piper Cubs and stuff. Can't say as I was really into it, but it was pretty cool. The amount of general aviation in this country is pretty dramatic. and everybody's flying, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 feet. The liability you would have by just having a bunch of drones going around without transponders, without any kind of a flight path, you're an aircraft at that point. Nobody would take that responsibility, would they, John? Just have them up there hoping nobody runs into them? Especially if you're near...
No.
What if you're near an airport, for God's sake?
Well, as some of these have been.
Yeah, well, which I mean, if you're a drone manufacturer, you would hope you'd be in, you know, Arizona or someplace, or, you know,
the theory on the internet is these are drones with sensors mounted to them to detect dirty bombs.
Right,
and
that's the story I was reading yesterday.
Okay, yeah. Well, maybe that makes some sense, and they're probably out of everybody's flight pattern. Maybe
that would explain why they're saying so little and so much contradictory about what they are, because they don't want, you know, to amp the fear factor up even greater by saying, "Oh, nothing to worry about. We're just looking for nuclear weapons that, you know, we think are there."
Well, do we know for a fact that somebody didn't file a flight plan to go right where they were going that night, and the airport saying, "No, you got to go around that area tonight"? Do we know that's happening? And maybe it is.
Well, there's even weirder stories of people in helicopters tracking these things, and as soon as they sort of, you know, get a bead on them, the things vanish. I mean, just poof.
Well, so, if they vanish, I wonder if they're not ours.
Well, yeah, or if they're holograms or something else that's not corporeal, you know, but is made to look pretty convincingly as if it's corporeal.
Oh, God. Do we need any more crazy news around?
Pick your story, you know. Well, watching the higher ups in government field questions about this is the most depressing thing of all.
Oh, I mean, yeah, yes, these guys questions. Why can't they just say, "I'm leaving it to the people who are investigators"? Everybody's got an opinion, and you know, what's her name?
We don't know what they are, but there's no threat. Well,
yeah, we don't know what they are, but there's no threat.
That means it's probably the military, and they're probably doing tests.
Where do we think we got these dirty bombs? Where did that come from?
They're scanning, seeing if those type of technologies work. So, if there was an incident, they want to know. Supposedly, they're using them in Ukraine too. So, if there's an incident or if they're looking for something, they need to know that these things work.
Well, that would mean that somebody somewhere they send out with a little bit of that stuff in his backpack to see if it can find it. So they must be introducing it, because you wouldn't just fly it over somebody's farm assuming the guy has uranium there.
The worst case would be they lost something and they're looking for it. The best case would be they're testing the technology.
Losing something and looking for it is probably not a good...
Yeah,
it's like,
or someone brought something. Yeah, or they know someone brought something and they're looking for it. That would be the worst case. The best case is they're just testing.
What was the Tom Clancy book that they...
Some of All Fears?
No, Some of All Fears was about... that wasn't about the bomb, was it? Yeah, it was. Was that it? Where somebody found a... was it a British or U.S. plane that had a bomb on it like 40 years ago that crashed? And we never could find it, and they found it, and they somehow turned the uranium into a... a bomb and set it off, what is it, Denver Stadium or someplace? Was that Some of All Fears? Might have been.
Some of All Fears was the neo-Nazis wanted to bomb Baltimore.
I think they ended up bombing Denver, whatever it was, I don't know, but something or other. They managed to get an atomic bomb to go off near the Denver Stadium while a football game was going on. But the detail... When you find the uranium to actually make a bomb is dramatically hard to do. You have to have all these, all this little stuff has to go off and essentially force it into the center where it becomes critical, right? Or something like that.
Depends on what kind.
Yeah, well, But anyway, they had, it took them months and months to actually turn it into a bomb. And so do we think a plane, somebody did that and somebody, it's missing and now we're looking for it? That wouldn't be good.
I don't think the government has said anything besides there's nothing to worry about. So, assuming it is them, they're either looking for something that somebody brought in or they lost, or they're just testing.
S&P futures up 13, NASDAQ futures up 76. We're going to go for a quick break. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains, think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about, we got Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures down 13. The NASDAQ futures down 76. We just have a quick one here because we're going to do it again at 7:30 because we got a little crazy with our sports talk. Matt, is there anything crazy going on in the traffic that you have to talk about now, or can we wait till 7:30?
Nothing crazy in traffic. We're good.
What about the... Are we going to get any light today? It's dark. It's about 7 o'clock, like
yeah,
middle
it's still
of the night.
Pretty, it's, well, hey, there is something actually worth talking about. We do have a dense fog advisory in effect until 11 a.m. this morning, so yeah. Got that. It's pretty warm out there, too. 48 at Midway, 46 at O'Hare, high of 51 today. Yeah.
Well, we had fog out in New Orleans on Saturday and Sunday. It was, you know, but that's okay.
Yeah, the thick as pea soup, they used to say.
Yeah, it's a... did you ever drive through fog you almost couldn't see through? That's scary.
Oh, yeah.
That's really scary. especially with the trucks. If you got to go a certain speed, or you're going to run right up behind by some truck. So you're sitting there going along, not seeing. It's just great.
Yeah, terrifying.
You're staring at the white line, and if I'm in front of you, anyway.
Just keep on going.
Yep. So, Jan, what? Quick report. Then we want to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the world. I guess I was going to try and get Mike on one of these days, but he's off in Washington. His son is becoming a colonel, which is fantastic news. And I met the young man, and I'll tell you what, he's a serious kid. Or he's not a kid anymore, but I really liked him. I mean, when I saw him, and dedicated, he did two or three tours in Afghanistan. And full bird colonel is a big deal. You got to be approved for Congress for that, don't you, Jan, I think?
Yeah, that's great. I'm proud for the whole family.
Yeah, even Mike. You know, Mike had a nice career and did a nice job at being a dad on top of that, which is a probably tougher job. But anyway, did good at both. So this report out of, for those people who don't remember, of course, nothing will ever happen to any of these people. Carl's right about that. I mean, we don't seem to have any sort of way to do crime and punishment in this country anymore. But for those that don't remember, wasn't it the U.S. Embassy was in Havana, right? It was in Moscow. Where the hell was this embassy we're talking about, Jan?
Well, it was in Havana. It was the first instance I recall of the symptoms, that people were describing of being attacked by some sort of radio frequency waves. That caused extreme headaches and nervousness and disorientation. So named the Havana syndrome. But it's been reported in other diplomatic mission spots.
Plus, it was on Star Trek.
I don't think it's just confined to Americans as well. I mean, there's enough of this going around where it seems to be an attack, a very targeted attack. It seems people talk about this being just only perceptible in a single apartment, or even mostly in a room in that apartment. So there's been some way of not just doing some sort of generalized assault using these devices or this technology, but over the weekend this story spilled out about the CIA's way of handling claims that the people have been bringing about this, and people have committed suicide over the.
Oh yeah, it's a big deal.
It's terrible stuff, but the scuttlebutt this week was that the CIA was not going to permit treatment at Walter Reed for people complaining of symptoms without the victims first submitting to a week-long study. In a sense, what to me sounds like, whatever they want to know, they want confirmation from people, and what God knows what other kind of assaults or insults are going to commit on people in the process of the so-called survey or research program that they were insisting people enter before they would give them treatment, and the whole thing was thrown out because of the ethics involved. Well, I mean this is the vaccine retinue in a nutshell too. That you compel people to participate in some kind of medical program, experimental or completely experimental, and punish people for not cooperating. And this is why this has now sort of ground to a halt.
How did it ever end up in front of Congress? It had to be on not on a committee that was on TV all day. It just had to be on some other committee that actually investigates stuff like this.
Yeah, probably at a very high level. In the national security level, because just like with the drones, the consequences of who's behind it and how prevalent it really is and the long-term damage that comes from it would be demoralizing for people in the Foreign Service and their families. So it would put a lot of people at risk and make them distrust not just the people committing these assaults, but our government for not being upfront about what's really going on. So I think it's good that they can detach the treatment angle from this kind of research part of it, or compelling people to do one before you actually give them some kind of treatment or comfort from it. It indicates to me that they know exactly what they're dealing with, but they want to find out some stuff before they go to what's really, you know, the problem here is that people are suffering.
Well, I'm not going to give a lecture in human anatomy, because I'm sure as hell no doctor, but there are things that, even though you can't hear them, your ear, it actually does register, and it can cause stress, it can cause other things, even though you don't necessarily hear anything. It's sort of like the subliminal. They used to get Flanagan on this all the time. Whenever his dad took him to the drive-in movie, they were the best at the what they used to call that, the subliminal.
Oh, was they advertising?
Yeah, but what they would do is everybody's way too young for this, but back in the day, to show what movies were like, they would actually give you this almost look like a deck of cards, and there was a bunch of pictures in there. And what you would do is you take your thumb and you flip it, or wherever you want to scroll it from front to back real fast, and it looked like it was moving, which took you about a second or two to do, and it was the exact same speed, almost the exact same speed as a movie, because a movie is, what, 27 pictures a second?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a movie is nothing more than individual pictures.
Yeah, mechanically strung together.
Yeah, and if out of the 27, you put one in there that's like a hot dog or a Coke, you don't recognize it, but your eyes see it. And it works on your brain. Matter of fact, they used to do this on TV, I think, until it was banned by Congress or somebody. So when you see people at the drive-in, everybody getting out of their cars heading for the popcorn or the Coke, it's because you've been seeing the popcorn or the Coke for an hour and a half before intermission, even though you don't realize you did. But you can do the same thing with sounds, too, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I had an experience in college my last year when I had a really bad head cold, pneumonia, and all this other stuff for weeks. But the toughest thing was I had some condition in my ears that caused me to hear when I was listening to any kind of music. And I always had headphones on or, you know, whatever, or the radio. But every note in the music was being sounded again in my head or in my eardrum at like 2.5 tones above.
So that's what happened.
Playing.
So that's what happened. It turned you into what you are.
It could drive you crazy. I couldn't listen to music. I had to like block it out because it was utterly, you know, deranging my senses. I couldn't, you know, like focus. I couldn't read when this was happening. I couldn't think. I couldn't remember stuff. And I've never had it since then. But it was terrifying. You know, a couple of weeks where this was happening. I went to the infirmary about it. And they were like, well, you know, you just got some kind of, you know, fluid or whatever, it'll go away. Like, and it did finally. But it made me think with the Havana syndrome, how you could totally lose your mind.
Oh, yeah, I can't. Well, they didn't accuse you of just getting some bad stuff? just saying.
Weren't that simple.
change your brand of beer? Say, get away from that Drury's.
Double my dose is more like it.
Get away from the Drury's. Get on the Hams.
Oh, the Drury's.
But isn't it amazing, though, that no matter what the subject, now we talked about just a couple of goofy subjects here today, not goofy, but off-the-wall subjects, the Savannah syndrome, and we've got the drone, and inevitably, there's somebody in government saying, don't worry about it, it's not a problem, and obstructing something. Why does somebody have to feel that they have to do that?
Well, the thing they're most afraid of is their own, you know, control or power over a situation. Once people begin to lose confidence in the people, you know, controlling the story, because it seems to be the case, and then Carl and Kevin have been chiming in on this too. That, you know, the drones are looking for, you know, it's gamma ray detection, because they think there's something there, and they can best look for it at night. But if they've told people in a general statement, this is what we're doing because there's a dirty bomb suspected in these, you know, metro areas close to financial and political centers, but really we have it under control, we just don't know where it is, that is not the message that's going to, you know, play well in Peoria, let alone in New York or Washington.
Well, so, Kevin texted in what, I mean, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but if they are looking for, if they are using these things to find, quote, a dirty bomb, did they give somebody a dirty bomb and say, go hide and we'll see if we can find you?
That's like what the antivirus companies do, too. They hire somebody to create a worm virus, and then they, you know, turn it into an antivirus product. We have just the way of fighting it. Subscribe here.
Well, you wonder, is it just the way people are? I mean, I know the politics. If ever you want to get a deep-seated knowledge of just people and politics, get on a condo board or get on a nonprofit board. You know, like if you're on the board of the animal welfare or something. It's like the Senate, for God's sake, with people arguing and this little group of people and that group of people, and even if you're not getting paid, we are just political animals, aren't we?
Well, given the way that we can be played by our sense of fear, and we got as if we don't have enough to worry about. But this is an old pattern, Tom. I mean, you think back to the whole 9/11 scheme and the Patriot Act and the anthrax scare and the underwear bomber scare, and people are regularly assaulted with things that seem to be nefarious forces underfoot. And if we just had more money and if we had more security, we could prevent this from really having a horrible result. But when people are panicked, they will do all sorts of crazy things to trade away their personal freedom and their wealth and everything else. So I just don't see this as anything new. It's just that the device or the machinery that's being sold here or tested has horrific implications if any of it is true. And of course they'll milk it as far as they have to in order to get people behind some new security protocols or restrictions on travel or inspections of stuff, whatever it may be behind this. And you can be sure something is behind it. It isn't just, oh my God, we found out that there may be one rogue bomb somewhere. No, it's something much more strategized than that, I'm sure. I don't want to think about it.
I know it's been a real long time ago, but I'm going to say, Kevin, my view of the country has changed all along the way. But I can't believe that of all these years, we still can't tell people what happened in the Kennedy assassination. Every president swears he's going to do it. Trump swore he was going to do it. Biden swore he was going to do it. And all of a sudden, they look at the stuff and they don't do it.
The third secret of Fatima. Yeah.
And I think that the people's names in there would shock some people's worlds. But you know what? I think holding on to it is worse than shocking people's world. There's a name in there that they don't want out. Now, whether it's Bush, whether it's Dulles, whether it's Johnson, whether it's somebody, there's a name in there that they don't want out.
And it's the same thing with the Martin Luther King assassination, with the Malcolm X assassination, and the RFK Sr. Yeah. assassination. These things are not quite far enough away from the public consciousness where they can afford to tell everything they know. When that will happen, certainly not going to be in my lifetime, it looks like, at this point. I was in sixth grade when JFK was killed, but I don't know much more now than I did then.
I don't get the, I never quite knew how we crossed the, the one in, Latin, the Rubicon?
Rubicon.
Yeah, Rubicon, or those that don't know that reference. When you went out and you were the general of the army, like Caesar was, and when you came back with the army, you never brought the army back in the city. You left the army outside the city and you came in. So it wasn't like you were taking them, you weren't coming in as a military junta or whatever you want to call it. And Caesar brought the army back across the Rubicon, right? He crossed the Rubicon. Was that him that did that? It was, I believe. I think that most people can handle the truth. I'm not like Jack Nicholson in the movie. I think if you appeal to people's higher parts, you might get some higher parts. If you appeal to the lower parts, you're surely going to get the lower parts. But I don't know. So if all of a sudden, I can't imagine me getting elected anything. But now I have a curiosity about this stuff, and somebody elects me as a representative. Okay, and I'm just a regular schmuck that is representing a district because people think maybe I can do a pretty good job. I would hope that's the real, and I just didn't buy it. Now all of a sudden I see some big secret. I'd be real hard-pressed to say, that now that I'm in this spot, all of a sudden I got three more votes than the other schmuck, that now I get to be privy to all this stuff and I'm somewhat more elevated, that I can handle the truth and you can't. I don't know where that, you know, I'm not saying that every secret should be spread, you know, could be shoved out on everybody. I mean, I'm not saying that at all. But the point being is, what is really, and I said it all the way through the Trump and Biden, you know, bringing the classified documents home, and then we had Mike Murphy on talking about who actually was near classified documents. And when you go to Congress with classified documents, there's seven copies, one for you and one for the six schmucks you're talking to. And by the way, when you get back, the guy goes, where the hell are the seven copies? Well, how classified is it if nobody's looking for it? So this whole thing becomes, and what Wayne Madsen was on once, Jen, he said the lunch menu was top secret. You know, come on. So the question is, how all of a sudden does Trump, who maybe, or Biden, or whoever, is clamoring to know what happened in the JFK assassination, all of a sudden they become president, they look at it and they go, oops, I can't tell people anymore. I'm privy to this information, but now they can't handle it. Or 2 weeks before, when you weren't president, you felt perfectly capable of handling it. Where's the line there that says that? I don't know where that is.
Well, yeah, and of course, the RFK assassination in 68, I think, you know, had he not just won the California primary, minutes practically before he was assassinated, he could still be alive, you know, today. He'd be 100 years old, but the fact that he was on the path to the presidency and that he had, you know, talked in campaign appearances that he was going to finally expose the parties who were behind his brother's assassination is probably the biggest reason. Vietnam, somewhat after, you know, behind that, one of the reasons why he was killed. And that's how bad whatever, you know, was capable of being exposed was, that it got JFK's brother killed. And, you know, a plane crash with you know, Teddy Kennedy, you know, people were killed in. He survived, but, you know, severely injured. And all sorts of creepy crimes among the people associated with the assassination, witnesses, people who just went to the Warren Commission and testified about what they knew, ended up dead in horrific circumstances. Dorothy Kilgallen, after interviewing Jack Ruby and having everything apparently told to her, was found dead under very mysterious circumstances in her own townhouse in a room she never even slept in. The whole thing was totally, you know, a murder that was staged to make it look like suicide.
I think RFK's assassination was single biggest history-changing event in our lifetime. JFK, the more I read about JFK, how sick the man was, and yet somehow he managed to have sex every day. You got to love the hormonal factor the guy must have had. I mean, but most people think he would never have survived his second term. That his whatever his disease he had was that bad.
Addison's disease.
Yeah.
He had all sorts of, you know, his back issues, that, you know, miserable back surgeries, whatever drug retinue he was on, and Jacqueline Kennedy was on too, with Dr. Feelgood, you know.
The lady that helped him out, he was not, this is a sort of an interesting story, because for those that don't know, once in a while we have the ChiroMed, you know, our advertisers on the show, and Dr. Miller there, he's a terrific guy, and boy, you know, he's helped me out a lot. But he, you know, I said, there was a lady, a lady doctor, back in the time where Jack could not even run. There's no way he could have run for president when he was a senator. He could barely be a senator. He could barely get around. And she ended up, she was one of the first people that knew back anatomy better than like anybody else. I don't know what school she went to. And you see him in the Oval Office in his rocking chair. Well, she designed the rocking chair. And there was a lot of braces that he wore, exercises he did, some kind of, a lot of it was not drugs, but certain things he did to strengthen the area, but it was all, and so I whatever the lady's name was, I'm an idiot for I asked my chiropractor, "Wait, have you ever heard of this lady?" He goes, "He looked the wise. You see all these posters with all these nerves and all coming in and out of your spine? She did all that. That's her. She is the founder of spinal and chiropractic medicine." And somehow or another, JFK, after all these other doctors that wanted to do this and that and the other thing and operate, he found her, and she basically got him good enough to run for president, or else he never could have run. He was too bad. Too bad.
Well, and he still had episodes while he was president. I mean, there's that clip of him where he's at a groundbreaking ceremony. He's got a shovel, and he just does a ceremonial removal of a little bit of dirt with the shovel and turns around in horrific pain. I mean, he has to cover his face. He looks like he's ready to black out.
Well, he originally...
That's just from bending over and lifting.
Well, he had the Addison's disease. It didn't make it any better, but he actually hurt his back playing football at Harvard. He went out for football. And then he got in the Army or the Navy. And he had some issues. This was the bad part of JFK. He was messing around with so many women in Washington that he ended up with some lady who was a spy or something.
Inga Binga.
Yeah, and so that's when they said, no, you better actually go become a real Navy guy, and that's how he got the PT boat. They essentially booted him out of Washington. They figured he couldn't find anybody to be messing with out in the South Pacific. But
what's even weirder, Tom, is Jacqueline Bouvier had the exact same job as the photographer, you know, op-ed, you know, human interest correspondent for the Washington Times that Inga Binga had. So makes me think Jackie was connected with intelligence.
Oh, God. So, unbelievable. So, John, what do you make of what's going on in the city? Because when Audrey gets down, we'll probably talk a little about the taxation stuff. I was reading, as everybody, you know, the creatures from the right, all you do is start, when I say all you do, but you gotta leave Illinois, you gotta go to those other states. And yet, I've had three or four listeners send me lists of all the total taxation in all the other states. Illinois is bad, but there's a lot that are not that much worse, or not much better. And there was a piece yesterday on CNBC I was reading. West Allis, Wisconsin, if people don't know where West Allis is, it's just west of Milwaukee. It's a suburb, and it's where the state fairgrounds are. So if ever you go to the state fair in Milwaukee, that's, you know, you're in West Allis. That's how you know where it happened. Otherwise, you wouldn't know where the hell place was. And all I did was talk about these people. They were, last year, their taxes were $3,500, another $4,800 in 1 year, property taxes. And now nobody has an extra $1,200 to throw around, or $13 or whatever it was. And people are in outrage. So it's not, and the states use it as a way, oh no, your assessment went up, which is probably true, given the that doesn't mean your tax necessarily has to go up. You know, they drop that on people. I have no choice, but since your house is worth $300,000 or was worth $200,000, I got to raise your tax by 50. No, you don't. You can lower the multiplier, right, John? I mean, they just want the tax bill to go up, and I understand why they do, because everything that they buy. I mean, what is the fleet of pickup trucks now for your, you know, for the people do the water and the sewer and stuff? You know, it's $40,000 a pop for the world's cheapest pickup. Used to be 20, right? So I understand why they need it, but are we ever going to get a come to Jesus moment on just what we're doing with this inflation?
Well, take Chicago. The increase in the city budget here in Chicago is 49% over what it was, I think, in 2020,
yeah,
you know, right around the time of, you know, COVID mess. But other big cities like New York, you know, it's only a 28% increase over that period. So it makes me think that there's wastage or misdirection or just stupidity on a scale in Chicago that's double what it is even in the other, you know, two blue cities. So there's we're hemorrhaging population here like nobody's business in the same.
I'm going to say that's probably the reason why it's up.
Well, yeah. The thing is, it never, you know, translates to any kind of savings when you have fewer clients. It just means that you now have to, you know, tax higher because you got fewer people that you can gouge.
Well, I mean, you still need the streetlights on in a house in a block with 50 homes as you do with 10 homes.
That's where, you know, and like, you know, all this other stuff, but there's no, you know, plan to bring people back, and unless it starts with the schools, which we'll have to save for a whole other program or series of programs at this point. But it's now got the city, I guess, transfixed in a way that it hasn't been in a while, because we've never had a mayor with such poor standing as we have now.
Well,
the aldermen and the people know somebody with a 14% approval rating doesn't get a whole lot of street cred when it comes to anything. So.
Well, you need to. I always think, John, that, you know, we got to go to break here. We'll go a real break, and we'll bring back what ought. I think, and this is why I'm not a politician, and why I would never get elected. I think you got to start with truth. You should come out and say, "Here's part of the problem. We have this hospital-based downtown now and school-based downtown. We've lost 25 buildings to the tax roll. And oh, by the way, the exchanges have left, so we lost another 15 buildings to the tax roll, basically. And we've lost 100,000 people in the last 5 years that were paying taxes in the neighborhoods.
Now, we got a problem. Sales tax, as yeah. retail offices have closed, restaurants yeah. have closed, well, all this know, translates to a loss of revenue.
So. But you know, you need to tell people that. And you have to say, okay, here's how we're going to get back on track, you know, and have some kind of a plan. And as much as I know, I was never a huge fan, and I know the people on the right can't stand the guy. If Pritzker pulls this thing off on the SART works, I'm going to say, part of the guy's Harry Houdini. If he does that, I mean, you know, we need how many more places like that? We need all kinds of places. But I don't think...
Well, at the rate things are going, Tom, Brandon Johnson is going to take Pritzker down with it.
That's a problem. Rate. That's a big problem, actually. SP Futures up 19. The NASDAQ Futures up 114. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
You can't handle the truth.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Matt Burn on the board. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 110. Let's do a quick spin around the world here. In Europe, we had the DAX down 73.4%. These guys haven't been down in a while. FTSE down 28.4%. The CAC around down 66. Almost, that's almost a full 1%. We're in Asia. You got the Nikkei down 12. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 175.9%. 19,795. Shanghai down 5. Call that flat. We've got oil down 55 cents, but still over 70. 70, 74. Ran up over on Friday. Brent down 47 cents, 74.02. Natural gas down 8 cents, 319. We've got gold up $4, 26.79. Silver up 10 cents, 31.13. We've got crypto, which has been all over the place, 103,000, but going straight up, 103,943, up 784. Our artificial stock. How can you complain about other stocks having too high a PE or price to sales ratio when you've got a stock here with no E and no sales, and yet it's up. It's $103,000. On Friday, just a quick review, we were going to mixed day. Dow was down 86. S&P was flat. NASDAQ was up 23. Now we got for us a quick traffic weather sports. Then we'll get to Audrey.
Yeah, it is currently 7:35 a.m. on December 16th, 2024. As far as traffic right now, inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Byrne is at 73 minutes. The outbound's looking at out to be 35 minutes. Current weather in Chicago, 49 at Midway, 47 at O'Hare. High of 51 today. There is a dense fog advisory in effect until 11 a.m. this morning. There is, though, a slight chance of snow on Tuesday night into Wednesday. So look forward to that. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 44 degrees this morning, sunny skies and high clouds. High of 72 degrees. NFL tonight, Bears play Vikings. Bears are 4-9 this season. Vikings are 11-2. Game starts at 7 p.m. on ABC. So if you don't want to watch that, and there's a lot of good reasons not to, Falcons at Raiders in Vegas. Game starts at 7:30. Just wait a couple, about a half hour later. Yesterday, though, Packers beat Seahawks 30-13, and Lions lost to Bills 48-42. Finally, in hockey, Blackhawks won against the Islanders. That was 5-3, the final score. Back to you, Chief.
Yeah, the Hawks actually won. They're unreal. Odd, do we have Odd?
We do indeed.
Audrey, how are you? Well, supposedly we still have Jan, right?
Here I am.
There you are. There you are.
Hi, all of a sudden my internet disconnected and then connected again. So here I am.
Well, are you as foggy as yesterday out there? She's a...
Foggier.
Really?
It looks... Probably see about, I don't know, 50 feet outside my window, and that's it.
Yikes.
Wow, it's like being on the moors.
Yes, pretty much. So hopefully no hound at the Baskervilles.
Yeah, well, you got two hounds.
They're sleeping.
Yeah, they still think it's nighttime, which it sort of is. Still dark down here.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading yesterday, I didn't mention it to you, but people in Wisconsin are bitching a blue streak about their property taxes going up. It's sort of happening everywhere. You were mentioning that people used to flee to Indiana, and all of a sudden they're things are starting to even up there too, aren't they? Not quite as even, but it seems like everybody's getting the jolt, not just here.
Well, they're still nowhere near so much more reasonable. The state is so much more well run. What they're finding is that in some of the closer to the border areas where people have, trying to get out of Illinois, St. John, Crown Point, and that whole area, they're missing some of the infrastructure, which of course costs money. But the taxes haven't gone up there. What have gone up is housing prices. Indiana, which was a bargain, maybe 5 years ago, is now probably priced pretty close to Illinois, especially in the close in places where it's an easy commute to Chicago. So not taxes. As Linda, when we went out with our friend Linda, who's a Indiana resident, her taxes are so cheap, and she lives maybe a block from Lake Michigan compared to what we would have here.
Yeah. They do something squirrely with your cars over there, don't they? Don't you have to pay your license fee is based on the price, on the value of your car or something?
Yeah, but it's a one-time charge. Like, you pay for your plates, and that's instead of... what we pay. So, everybody gets you a way or another, but yeah, I think it's still a better deal. Like, they don't have, they don't tax food, I think, food or right. Medicine. There's something where you do get some breaks there, but all in all, I think it's a much more well-run state than ours is.
Well, we've got issues here with the, but what do you, where's the real estate market now? I was picking up, my buddies want to ride to work on Saturday morning, and I just happened to notice, because I would drive usually through there at night, somebody else knocked down like three or four homes on, what's the street, the other side of Fremont, whatever one this guy lives on. Actually, it is Fremont, same street that John used to live on. Somebody knocked down another three or four homes, built up some huge place. What do they see that we're missing? I don't know. Would you do that here, John?
As you know, my views about living in Chicago not happening the way it's being destroyed at an alarming rate, so I wouldn't be investing in Chicago. But
how do you spend $1 million for three or four houses only to knock them down and start over? I mean, that's a big bet on some places, isn't it, Jan?
I would say he probably spent about $1 million per house.
Yeah, that's what I'm
there.
Saying. Yeah.
So $4 million. And you're probably going to buy a house with, what, a square footage of maybe 15,000 square feet, 20,000 square feet, two or three stories, maybe with an elevator and a garage. So your taxes are probably going to be what, $60,000?
Easy.
John, $70,000?
Yeah. People who won't miss the money, clearly, and they can build the kind of enclave or empire, you know, that nobody else could build anywhere. I guess enough attraction to living near, you know, the center of a big city if you can completely isolate yourself from everything bad about it. And it takes somebody with that kind of money.
You get to pay all that money.
Yeah, you still get rats.
I had to live with the most rat-infested city and crime-infested city practically in the United States.
That's all the rats you want. Life.
Well, you know, rats need love, too. What can I tell you? We need a bunch of terrier dogs around. Or feral cats or something. So what's going on in your hood? You're busy. What is your normal clientele? Is it what age group? Is it young people, old people, mix? What is it?
You know what? I've gotten a little bit of everybody this year. It's a very interesting year. I have a lot of seniors that were, if not downsizing, at least moving maybe out of a big house into a ranch or a townhome. I've got kids that are, you know, getting their first or second house. And I've got a lot of middle-aged people, probably a lot of the 50 to 75 group, a lot of them moving around. They're getting out of maybe their big house and looking for stuff. Looking to change their lives. A lot of people are looking to have something out of state with a winter getaway, or they want to travel, or they want the space. That's the problem about the suburbs, is that it's not like people don't downsize like used to. They're like, oh my God, I'm moving out of my 5,000 square foot house and I'm going to get a 1,000 square foot condo. That's not what seniors want now. They want space. They don't want to give up much space when they move. They want to still have a nice lifestyle. They still want big rooms. They want places to entertain. Their beef is usually outdoor space and either a ranch or at least a home with a master bedroom on the first floor, looking to the future. Even if you're healthy, you buy a house. If you buy a home that's a two-story with at least one bedroom and a bath on the first floor, you're ahead of the game, not for aging in place, which happens to everybody, whether we like it or not, but also for a visiting in-law, a sick relative, somebody falls and breaks a leg, that extra bedroom could be worth gold and you just don't realize it. In so many places, everywhere, were built just with all the bedrooms upstairs. And that's something that's coming home to roost now with a lot of it. So anything that's a ranch or first floor bedroom is always in demand.
Well, anybody who falls asleep during the Bear game tonight and wakes up and has to head to the bedroom would rather not do 20 steps. Just saying. what percentage of people tonight watching this game, maybe by themselves or the wife or something, says the hell with these guys? What percentage will be asleep by the end of the game, John?
You are.
I am for sure.
But I gotta watch this game. Snore.
Well, you know, I blame it on Audrey, John. It's all her fault, because if she was engaged in the game with me, then...
Why would I be engaged in the game?
Well, like I said, but, you know, if John was over and we actually cared about the game, where we could actually talk about something during the endless commercials, I wouldn't fall asleep.
No, you could pick up the phone and call Nancy or Kathy. They love to talk football.
That is the truth.
And there's way... I don't want to waste my time sitting there watching commercials for hours. I don't know why you just don't record it and watch it later. You could still be surprised.
Because all my idiot friends are texting me the whole time during the game. What good would we do afterward? Right, Jen?
Hey, I'm losing.
Can we shut off the...
I can't help your friends.
Audrey, I've got a question for you. I'm kind of...
Hey, I'm losing you.
I'm impressed by how...
Yeah, I'm going in and out here.
Well, you're the one who's the problem, I think.
Okay. Probably AT&T, I blame them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, John, what did you say?
No, that's okay. I'm impressed by a phenomenon I notice. I call it the death of the dining room. And I see now that, you know, in design of places or conversions, of apartments, or when you turn something into a condo, the first thing that seems to go is the dining room. And I lived in an apartment in Logan Square for a couple of years. It was a very small one-bedroom apartment, but it had a dining room. And when the building went condo after I moved out, the dining room became subsumed into the second bedroom. So now it's a really small two-bedroom apartment, but it doesn't have a dining room. And I think these are sort of going the way of the dodo. When you see houses, you know, depending on when they're built and what the emphasis was on space or where it was allocated, like second floor bedrooms or first floor bedrooms, do you see dining rooms as going completely out of style?
Well, here's something interesting, though, and this is a phenomenon, maybe since COVID, maybe a little after, dining rooms are coming back. Now, they don't necessarily want the living room, but they want the big kitchen, the family, you know, family room attached, kind of like the great room there. But the younger generation is now wants a dining room. They're going back. The generation that skips soda, I guess we're looking at the Gen Zers here, they want the dining room. They actually, people are starting to register for China. And if you get a chance, and I know, John, it's not your thing for sure, but if you look at some of these homes magazines, they're featuring dining rooms. And all the China that nobody wanted for years of the crystal, all of a sudden people are like, well, you know, I think I want a dining room. So, and also you're seeing like chintz come in. So the big furniture movements are modern 50s dining room, like our parents, you know, like they had when we were growing up. So that mod 50s look is hot. And also the chintz overstuffed furniture look is back. So if you look at some of these home magazines, they are featuring, you know, the beautiful kitchen with the big island, blah, blah, blah. But they also have the dining room and that, like, with wallpaper, John.
No.
Wallpaper. No. Yes. Wallpaper's hot.
Well, I know the ceramic
fixtures. Fixtures are also very in again.
Well, ceramic tile, the old ceramic tile, the small stuff with like the pattern in it that whenever I remodeled the house, first thing I did was cover up. That's back.
That's back. Oh, here's the latest thing is painted refrigerators.
Oh, God.
To match decor. And some companies are now coming out with like the 50s style refrigerators, 60s style. And a lot of them are like painted like works of art, like painting or, you know, paisley designs. So it's very interesting. So you're seeing the 50s and the some of the styles now.
Yes.
If you live long enough, everything you own is new again.
One of my people in the building, I won't say one of the bartenders, one of my sources for Stacks and Jacks, she and her husband are remodeling their kitchen in Mount Greenwood. Married to a fireman, she's a stewardess, just a sweet lady. Guess what color stove and fridge are getting?
Avocado or harvest gold?
I don't think the gold's back, but it's green. And I said, you mean avocado? They don't call it avocado now, it's just green. I don't think they call it avocado. Yeah. I said, you got to be kidding me. that was the color of our stove in the bungalow we bought in 1958. I never thought green would be back ever. But evidently it is.
Hey, we're there. We're all back in.
we're back.
You live long enough, you see it all come back.
Well, you know, there was a.
See, that's right, flares.
It's not.
I saw somebody with a suede fringe jacket on the other day on the street.
Oh God.
Jackets were in.
You know what's interesting is you know, of course, you know, Aud is expert at all this. I mean, I admit that all the time, and I try not to get her away because she knows her stuff, and all I'll do is screw up. But I know a little bit about this because when I remodeled homes, I used to do a lot of research. And the first energy crash was in the 70s, right, guys? And all the designs for homes, and I don't know if anybody ever heard of an envelope home, or you know the passive solar home, all that stuff is, despite all our
dome homes.
Well, but despite all of
remember
our
remember the roundhouse.
Yeah, I mean all our stuff about electric and all that stuff, which you never hear of is a passive solar home. And you can incorporate some of that in any home you build right now, so cheaply, so effectively, to cut down on any of your rates and any of your stuff. And I could go into it because I actually do remember some of the stuff. But one of the things that what they did is is people started building homes in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. All I talked about was a duplication of effort, where you used to be people like lived in the living room, which I used to call the front room. It was a big room where people, you know, TV you watched there, whatever you did, that's what you did. And everybody goes, oh, no, we don't want to do that anymore. We're going to have this family room. So you have this big living room that nobody ever went into. Then you've got this family room that people went into. And finally people go, well, now we need a, we're going to get a, what do you call the different houses with the three little levels, like three or four steps? No, we're going to have like a basement room for the kids. So all you end up doing is have rooms you don't use. So when you talk about the dining room, Ed, the logic on all this stuff was people had small kitchens, maybe with an eat-in breakfast table, then you had a dining room where everybody ate together. Then all of a sudden, oh, let's make the kitchen bigger, where you've got maybe chairs at the counter in the kitchen, and you've got a big table in the kitchen that seats the whole family, and maybe some guests. Now, why the hell do you need a dining room? You basically have a dining room. So it all becomes duplicative. You know, if you got some massive kitchen with a table that seats 12, what do you need another table, another room for that seats 12? So, I mean, your living room, it got to the point where they said your living room should be a small, very cozy room where if the adults have two other couples in, the six people can sit in big chairs and have an amazing conversation, maybe a little music in the background, no TV, no nothing. That should be your living room for you have the adult guests in. Don't have it look like the family room that looks like the basement. What's the point? So all you're doing is heating
That's
more area.
Right.
So, I mean, the iterations kind of go back and forth. Am I correct? Okay, we're going to have a huge kitchen. All of a sudden, wait a minute.
And everything's marked.
Well, you were saying, Rod, that during COVID, the biggest loser in COVID is the open floor plan. Right?
Oh, yeah, because you all hated each other after a while. Too many people in one room and nobody could work or talk or read TV. Yeah.
So where is the segmented? Is the I was dying to have you on today, Odd, because last week was an article we read. Jan, I don't know if you were on. We talked about. I said the first thing Trump can do, the best thing he can do for inflation. This is somebody who actually writes some pretty good stuff, and I like him on TV. But I could give him an economics 101 lesson once in a while. He said what Trump needs to do is build 28,000 homes because we're short homes. And that would cure inflation. And I'm going, wait a minute. Well, there's new construction going on in your area. What's the price of the new construction? Are you there? We lose Odd? Anyway,
Tom, I just saw a figure the other day that Brandon Johnson was touting his you know affordable housing construction plans in Chicago. And in neighborhoods where units are selling for, I think, $126,000, it's costing over $700,000 to build a unit like that, which is hardly what people would consider low-income housing or affordable.
Well, I would
housing.
Say
but that's what construction costs.
Okay, back. Sorry.
We were talking about the idea that you need, if you build more homes. I mean, obviously, the economic model here is that if you build the bigger the supply. Okay, the price goes down. That's the economic model. But the problem comes down to is I think the replacement cost of homes. I would say the replacement cost of your place ought is 50% higher than you could sell it for. Easy.
Well, my insurance. When you said that, my insurance company said I need to reevaluate the value.
But whatever you're coming in on,
it's a substantial amount of money. I mean, it's a lot of money that I would have to boost to get this thing at market value. So that's what we're looking at now. I mean, for a complete replacement value, I would say I'm probably almost at 60 or 70%.
Yeah.
I would have to boost it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. So the idea in a decent neighborhood, not Lincoln Park, not Inglewood, in a middle of the road neighborhood, what's a nice bungalow, a nice, you know, a kept up bungalow, what does it go for? What do you think? $275,000, $300,000?
I mean, are you talking how about the holiday for that ranch home that I had to go check on? They had a
Well, the place in St. John Fisher and Fairfield there, it's going to go for mid twos. I don't think you can put that thing up for $250.
Probably not. So, not with the cost of materials. Yeah. So you're probably $250 is your starter home. Three bedroom ranch with a finished basement, with a nice shower. I mean, very nice home, but you know, kind of small. $450. So you know, I would say a starter home was $350.
Yeah, so I mean,
in a lot of places.
So, but the replacement cost is going to be $350. So building a lot of these things, those places by you, how much are those? The new construction.
Oh, the townhomes you're building?
Yeah.
Those new ones? Two bedrooms, I think 2.5 bath with the basement, starting at $700.
So how's that fighting inflation, Jen?
Well, and the thing is, even if you could build them for those amounts of money, so you would be missing a lot of the amenities that you've gotten used to, things like hardwood floors or plaster walls or hot water heating systems. All the stuff that it was in older buildings when construction was much cheaper. To duplicate that now with the kind of masonry work and just the comfort level, you'd be doubling that probably if you wanted
plaster walls. Jan, how old are you? 110 plaster walls. When was the last time you saw somebody
put plaster? Most of my walls in my place are plaster, Tom, and I dearly love them. quiet.
You know, I'll tell you this though. There's a huge difference between north side plaster and south side plaster. There is actually. I mean, north side stuff is older generally. It's thinner. It's, you know, what I'm saying. South side plaster will last you forever. The north side, not so much.
You get in some of the homes in Beverly, West Beverly, that are like, you know, beautiful, basically little mini mansions. And there was one home that I had seen in Palos Park that was all plaster with 2 foot thick walls. And the house had, not only had hot water heat in the floors, it had it in the walls.
Whoa.
And it was like being the 50s.
Well, you know, they're ugly as sin, but the best seat in the world is a radiator.
Yep.
If you have rooms big enough to have a radiator in there, you know you got a house.
Just plus, saying. Then in the winter.
Well, are there any? You're blinking it out here still, but is there any place to invest? Do you think like these home companies, these home building companies, are a buy here? I mean, the high end ones or the midterm, they seem to be doing okay, but are they? They're not. Do you think they're raving buys here just because of the demand or what? Or not really? John, you may have to answer that question because I don't know if whatever she's using over there. That's what happens when you get these suburban AT&T things.
Mm. It ain't good.
But I'm not so sure that the housing stocks have been. Maybe next week I'll dig up a few of the housing stocks and I'll just, without giving any recommendations, I'll just say where they've come from in the last few years and what their PE ratios and stuff are. You got the what's the one that does the high end homes, something homes. Dan knows all these places. He got some guys in them. Once in a while we do earnings plays in some of the places, but they're not. It doesn't seem like they're doing that spectacularly well. I don't know what the future here is. I mean, as my buddy Rob told me, you know, just be careful if you remodel. If you decide you want to remodel homes again, well, how am I going to do that when I'm managing money all day? Piece of plasterboard costs as much in a cheap home as it does in an expensive home, so stay away from the cheap homes. So how can you even remodel places like that, John?
And even if they're not that cheap, but you substitute things like cinder block construction for, you know, old-fashioned, much more expensive brick and mortar, which happened in a lot of, you know, the neighborhoods that were completely reimagined on the north side, like in Lakeview, and that, where there were just whole blocks that were torn down. With, you know, 6-unit, 9-unit condo buildings put up in place of them, put up very, very quickly and look really nice on the facade. But you look around, you know, the foundation, and you look on the sidewalls and that, you think this stuff is going to be crumbling in 20 years. So they weren't cheap necessarily to build or to buy, but they don't have the lasting power either. So you're looking at a much more expensive home because it has a, you know, a shorter usable life without significant, you know, maintenance or reconstruction at some point. And all that's been, I think, taking a toll on a lot of neighborhoods that sprang up quickly or benefited from, you know, easy money when there was an interest in rejuvenating neighborhoods. And, you know, you could build stuff very quickly, but you build it essentially because it looked okay, but it didn't have any kind of staying power. And we'll be paying a price for that, I think.
Before. Well, sure. I mean,
we're already paying a price for it, really.
I mean, real quick, because we got a dash. Odd was selling a couple homes in Chicago Heights, and without dropping anything nefarious about anything, I said, "Whoa, you're not driving out there by yourself. I'm taking you." Chicago Heights has been an area that has not done so well in the last 30, 40 years. But the taxes are incredibly high. And she was selling this house for, people in there were selling it for, I'm going to say, 120 or something, Jen, or something. And it was a house that, had seen a better day. But I think the taxes were like $8,000 or something. Or
yep.
I mean, it's incredible. So some guy, this really nice, I met him, he wanted to do his part for the neighborhood. He remodeled his three flat, and he did a gorgeous job. This African American dude, and I mean, he hired a guy tomorrow to do your place, but he was above that pay grade, and I think once the taxes on the place were over 10 or 12 or something, so he couldn't. I don't think he could sell that place anywhere near what the money he put in, and he was renting it, just because he wanted people in the neighborhood have a nice place that they could rent, but. He was doing his part, but he wasn't any help from anybody. I mean, I don't know how you can, but by far, I think the place that Odd ended up selling, the taxes were more than the mortgage going in. I mean, that's pretty awful. I mean, what'd they do?
You can't make the kind of rents on those places to keep afloat.
No.
It's just impossible.
What did they lose? They lost, what was the mall out there?
Lincoln Mall.
Lincoln Mall. They lost a few commercial places, and they just said, "Okay, we'll sprinkle the taxes around everybody else." Well, I'm sorry. I mean, if you're in a house that's $120,000, it's hasn't had any updating for 25 years. Because why would you? I don't know how you pay $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year in taxes. How can you?
No, and you can't attract tenants or buyers.
No, it's we need to get this act back together. Whichever side of the aisle you're on, sure seems to me like there's a lot of things that have to happen here. And I don't see them happening. But the market goes up all the time. And if you have Bitcoin, you'll be wealthy, right, John? It's a question of just...
El Salvador is going off of it, Tom. Did you read that?
Oh, God. Well, yeah, I mean,
if they were ever really on it, it's not clear.
That's my... The Bitcoin phenomenon is one of my single biggest worries about the stock market. Now that there's a couple of trillion dollars in there, because if somebody... And I don't know anything about it, so don't take my recommendations. It might go to 200,000, but I just... The idea that nobody knows nothing about it, but everything's okay and it's all square. If that ever changes someday, I don't know what that day is going to look like, John. Make 29 look like a kid stuff, right?
Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't happen. SP Futures, we have to rearrange everybody. Well, you're not Wednesday, but we'll have to get you. We got some people that are missing this week, so we'll be tracking you back down, John. SP Futures up 20. Plus, we got to figure out where we're going to watch the game Friday night. Where are we going to go? We don't really sleep in a bar.
Probably go to the stadium, Tom.
Oh, God. Well, I hear the tickets shot way up and now they shot way back down.
Yeah.
Maybe the weather's not supposed to be so good. Anyway, SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 111. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks. Good job, Matt.
Thank you.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now. Yep.
That's all, folks.